Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Güter. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar.
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. Unfortunately, the international break is upon us, so we're going to have to wait a few more weeks until we're back at the action. Alas, we still get to talk about some fantastic football we saw over the course of the weekend, that being the action from match day 9. There's been a lot of drama off the field for a few clubs, in particular Schalke 04, and we'll talk about them in a moment. And for some, it's been very, very strong. I think you look at how the opening stanza, the first quarter of the campaign has gone, and in some regards, there has been some status quo. You look at clubs like St. Pauli, you look at Hamburg, they are where we expected them to be, but what's around them, be it Kaiserslautern, Holstein Kiel, potentially a bit surprising. Down the bottom, I think a lot of people had Osnabrück and Braunschweig in the bottom two, that be the case, the club that has joined them in that bottom three is Schalke. And they were hoping that this time they could break a two-game losing run when they welcomed Hertha BSC to the Veltins Arena on Sunday afternoon. Just over 62,000 packed the stadium in Gelsenkirchen. And look, it was a very scrappy game to begin with. Not a lot of chances on either side. The best chance coming on 26 minutes when Keenan Karaman found Dominic Drexler, and you know, maybe Drexler should take a touch there, but he hits it first time and he, you know, kicks it into row Z. It was a bit of a nothing finish. Hertha grew quite well in this game, and a player who really was on top of everything was Fabian Riese. He assists in many ways the opening goal. Ball into the box. It's not dealt with by debutant goalkeeper Justin Hikarin, who was making his first team appearance. With Michael Langer on the bench and Marius Müller, Ralf Fährmann both out with injuries. But the ball not really dealt with particularly well by Hikarin, nor the Schalke defence, and Ismail Prevoyak, someone who we're a bit unsure if he was going to start this game, especially his off-the-ball defensive stuff, had them a bit vulnerable against St. Pauli, but they stuck with him, did fantastically well, puts the ball into the back of the net, and it's 1-0. Just after the break, it would be 2. Just 6 minutes later, Fabian Riese getting the better of Hikarin. It's a bit of a mistake from the 22-year-old. Just didn't really cover his bases, and it goes through him and into the back of the net to make it 2-0. And from there, Hertha just sat on their laurels. They were pretty comfortable being 2-0 up, and Schalke were able to sort of build, bringing on Yusuf Kadabai, Brian Lazma as well, gave them a bit more intensity, a bit more potency in the final third, and you know, moving Derry John Merkin, who has been pretty good as a sort of a wide attacking player, they bring him to left back. They do get their goal. It's a really nicely worked goal for Schalke, coming in the form of Kadabai getting his second goal in as many games to beat Tjaak Ernst. But Ernst in particular, he was very good down the stretch when Schalke were pressing, making opportunities. He made a couple of really good saves, and ultimately, you know, Hertha hold on for a 2-1 victory. A couple of big talking points in the game itself. There was a handball, shall we say, in the box from Jonjo Kenny, which didn't seem to be looked at. Wasn't given as a penalty, and I think the frustration with that kind of decision is how inconsistently that has been officiated over the course of the season, not just in the Bundesliga, but just in general. It seems to clearly strike the hand of Kenny, and yeah, no penalty decision, and you know, you don't want to use that as an excuse as to why Schalke lost. You know, largely for the first 60 minutes they were very poor once again. No real cohesion, and they were exploited quite a lot by Riese. We talk about matchups, and when you lose Cedric Brunner like Schalke did, and they have to bring in Matriciani, and we know how deficient he is at his defensive responsibilities, like it was just It was hard to watch. If you're a Schalke fan, if you're a Hertha fan, you're loving it because Hertha would, early and often get the ball to Reza, and he gets the one-on-one matchup, and you just know it's a matter of time that Reza will get past Matriciani, gets the byline, either whip the ball back in, or as he did for his own goal, cut inside and put the ball into the back of the net. It was a big, not really sure how they could have gone about it any differently, but it certainly was. It was a bad matchup for them, and it was one that Hertha were more able to exploit. They pressed really well as well. Hertha, we talked about last week about against St. Pauli. They're not exactly the team you want to press against, but against a Schalke team that has really struggled to build up from the back, they really have sort of a lack of playing identity. Hertha were able to really be aggressive and cause turnovers, and their first half was quite good. Didn't do a whole lot in the second half, but they didn't have to after they took the 2-goal advantage. One last thing on Schalke. New coach set to be announced today. We expect it to be Carol Geritz, formerly of Union Saint-Gilloise from Belgium. I hope I've pronounced that right, and please tell me if I've pronounced it wrong. Took them to the Europa League quarterfinals last season. It looks like Schalke beat out Bordeaux for his services, and he has a massive task ahead. This international break is a really pivotal point in their season. 6 defeats in their opening 9 games. A team that lacks complete cohesion. They don't, they are essentially the second worst defensive team in the league. Now, if you take away the 7-goal game Osnabrück had, which, is always going to be a massive outlier, but we can't ignore it. They are just atrocious at the defensive end. No clean sheets since match day 2. It's just a horror show. The luxury is they know how to score goals, 14 goals this season, which puts them sort of in that, lower to mid part of the table. But it's been a really disappointing start to the season for Schalke. And, no game is easy in the Zweite Bundesliga, but when they return, Karlsruhe away, there's an opportunity there, Hanover at home, and then Nürnberg away. So you have teams that are in sort of the mid, Karlsruhe are near where they are, Hanover overperforming and Nürnberg are, improved, but still a long way from being anywhere near where they've been over the, the last 6-7 years. So yeah, good win for them. Hertha, they get Nürnberg on the way back, then Paderborn. So it's looking interesting for Hertha, considering how they started the season and it was the sort of the run of disappointment. They've won four of their last 5 games. Oh, sorry, 4 of their last 6 games. So they are definitely on the up. Surprisingly, they are the only team yet to have a draw this season. So there you go. Let's move on to the Fritz-Walter Stadion, Kaiserslautern against Hanover. This was a Friday night game. This was the other World Feed game. The hosts winning by 3-1. There goes my Slack, my Google calendar. Hanover started really positively in this game. They get the opening goal. Andreas Vogelsammer does so well. He's got, I think it's Tomiak, is completely draped on him, wearing him like a cheap suit. But Vogelsammer's really strong in the challenge. Whips the ball back in, and Harvard Nilsson, who's been really good this season, just with a cool finish, sends Kral, I don't know where he was going, he exited stage right, and just put the ball in the back of the net. They thought they had the second goal just before the break. This time, again, Vogelsammer finding Phil Neiman from the spot. Unfortunately for Hanover, Vogelsammer is offside. It's a shoulder. It was really tight. You could argue that maybe on another day that might be given. Well, but yeah, it's marginally offside. And then they give away the penalty just before the break. It seemed harsh. It seemed really harsh on Halstenberg. Penalty gets given Boris Tomiak after the 2 penalties they missed last week. Kaiserslautern, Tomiak gets the Guernsey to take the spot kicks. He scores, makes it 1-1 at the break. And it was a topsy-turvy game, but Kaiserslautern started to get on top. Bringing Aaron Opoku in the second half really opened them up, and they get the second goal 11 minutes before regular time. It's a wonderful counter-attacking move from from Kaiserslautern with Tashi and then Opoku finishing off the work to make it 2-1. Then Hanover were reduced to 10 men. Nielsen got a straight red card. Again, I didn't... Like, it seemed like an overreaction to the situation. Elvedi goes down really easily, and I don't think there was enough contact to warrant a straight red card. Maybe a yellow card and a warning, but yeah, I wasn't particularly fond of that red card. It seemed quite iffy, and then they gave away another penalty. Initially not given as a penalty by referee Michael Bakker for a challenge by Arimbe on Hanslick. And to be fair, live it looked like a straight dive, and I don't have an issue with Bakker giving a yellow card to Hanslick, but, you know, this is why we have the technology. Arimbe touches the... steps on the foot of Hanslick and he goes down. It does seem very soft, but it technically was a correct decision. And Tomiak again scores to make it 3-1. So at that time, Kaiserslautern were top of the table. But results to Hamburg, and we'll talk about St. Pauli next, meant that Kaiserslautern will enter the international break in third place. 3 wins in their last 5. They are unbeaten in that run. They are second best in terms of run of form in the division. They've been really, really solid. They've got the goal scoring, and they're doing all of this without Ragnarke. We talked about how great he's been this season for Kaiserslautern, but they've done fantastically well to find other goal scorers and make the most, they made the most of their chances, even though 2 of their goals came from the spot. They were, I would say, large part, a bit more enterprising in the second half and deserved all 3 points. And if it wasn't for some of the magic Ron Robertzila was producing, you could argue that the score could have easily been a bit more exacerbated for Hanover, who were also a little bit on the unlucky side. You know, those penalties were a bit 50-50. The red was definitely 50-50. But you, if you look at all situations, 2 penalties to give away, and then it's a turnover in their offensive third that leads to a counter-attacking goal. 3 individual errors leading to concession. It's really hard to win games of football like that. And they'll learn from it. They've got Magdeburg coming up, then Schalke, and then on the 5th of November, the big Nord Derby against, Nord Derby, Lower Saxony Derby. Well, 2 teams who really don't like each other in Eintracht Braunschweig. So that will be quite an interesting game. Kaiserslautern, when they return, they're at Fortuna Düsseldorf in the Topspiel game, and then they've got Hamburg at home in another Topspiel game. So they'll feel really good about themselves. They're in a really good space, and we'll see if they can continue this form. We said we're going to talk about St. Pauli. Let's do it now. They welcomed Nürnberg to the Millerntor in a Topspiel game, and wow, what a performance. What a game this was from St. Pauli. It's the second time this season they've scored 5 goals at home. 5-1, the final score against Nürnberg. Goals from Elias Saad, a brace from Johannes Egerstein, Etienne Amanita and Connor Metcalf for Nürnberg. Kanji Okunuki scores his 2nd goal away from home this season. And look, Nürnberg saw what Hertha did, and they wanted to play a bit of a high, dangerous pressing game. And, they found out the hard way. Unfortunately for Nürnberg, much like some of the other teams in the division, you can press with purpose, but if you don't have a particularly strong defensive setup, you can be exposed. This St. Pauli team has, whatever they did, whether it's the sort of placebo effect of Simon Sola coming into the team without playing a minute. I don't know what's happened to this St. Pauli side, but they've found their groove. They're playing fantastic football. Seeing Jojo Egerstein in particular, because we talked about their success will ride on having a consistent number 9. He scored 3 in his last 2 games, and he's got some sensational goals in this game. This was one of the good ones, and Metcalf's goal at the end was just delightful. Such a sensational ball from Etienne Amanito outside of the right foot, playing Metcalf in, and even though Metcalf had still so much to do, he finishes really well. And I felt sorry for Christian Mateña, because he wants to come out and intervene, but he gets to a point where he realizes he's not going to make a play. And Yeah, he caught in the no man's land. It was a great finish for him. Jackson Irvine also was fantastic in this game. Two assists, really set the tempo for the way that St. Pauli wanted to play. And him and Hartle, you just know what you're going to get with them. Very stable at both ends of the ground. They can both defend. They, you know, press forward. And I think Irvine's versatility in particular makes such a difference to this team. But also now you can have Metcalf coming off the bench. He can play as an attacking right winger. You know that if Irvine or Hartle are out injured, Metcalf is a more than capable number eight option. So they've got that. Look, their squad depth is fantastic, and they've still got players to potentially come back. We've already mentioned Sola, but they've got such options, and you know they've won what, four of their last five games, four on the bounce. They are the only team in the division yet to lose. Best defensive record with only six goals conceded from their opening nine, and they basically left, you know, since the overturn, since that win against Kiel, they've really returned to the St. Pauli we saw in the Rückrunde under Fabian Hertzler. Like, they're really strong defensively, very hard to score against. They limit chances unless they're, you know, they play a bit sloppy, but they were much, they, once they conceded the first goal to Okunuki, they really, they kept it simple, they kept it stable, and ultimately a fantastic result for them. For Nürnberg, there was nothing to like about what they did defensively. The first goal, look, was well worked for St. Pauli, but yeah, they just, too many mistakes. You could see what they were trying to do, but they fell into the same track that Hertha fell into the week before. You can press, but you've got to win the ball early, because once the ball gets out past and bypasses the midfield, St. Pauli attacks with numbers. You've got the wide players that are attacking as well, and it's just really difficult to beat. But fortunately for Hertha, this is going to be a learning experience for them, and you know, in many ways, the break comes at a bit of a good time. I think the one thing looking at them so far this season is sort of the inconsistency in their defensive play. We knew that it was one of their weaknesses. At least they're improving in terms of their scoring output, but you know, 18 goals this season conceded, so going at about two a game, it's third worst defensive record in the division. So yeah, bit of work to be done over training, over the international break, and we'll see if they can find a combo that works best, because yeah, it was a pretty tough day for the club in Hamburg. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we'll look at our Group 2 games, starting at the Merkurspiel Arena when Fortuna Düsseldorf hosted Osnabrück. Off the back of the disappointing result against Kaiserslautern the week before, Osnabrück made the journey to Düsseldorf in hope that maybe they could get back to winning ways against a side that has been very impressive this season. In particular, Düsseldorf's fantastic work has been at the defensive end, entering match day 9 that only conceded 6 goals this campaign, which was second best behind St. Pauli. Osnabrück, as we know, have a pretty troublesome defensive record, but they've certainly taken steps to improving that, and they did so in this game. Fortuna were a little bit disappointing in this 1-1 draw, and I think the one thing that really stood out is the lack of a killer instinct. They had a ton of chances, but a lot of those were from outside the box. If you look at the 18 shots on goal, 10 of those were from distance, and that's very hard to win games. Four of those shots from all areas were on target, and despite having a lot of possession and really dictating the tempo of the play, they didn't really make the most of it, and it did take something a bit special to open the scoring. Emmanuel Yor on the hour mark, taking shot from distance from a preceding set piece, and the ball, you know, squeezing through everyone and past Leonard Grill, and Grill was again very solid in this game. But Osnabrück, you know, credit to them. You know, they were much better defensively. They were very solid in limiting those high quality scoring chances, and the XG shows that with the 0.58 expected goals for Fortuna Düsseldorf. But yeah, look, they pressed, they created opportunity, you know, they were much better late in the game when it got a bit desperate. Look, Mark Kreides' introduction was quite good. And they did get their goal in the end. Erik Engelhardt, who scored last week, he's now got 4 goals this season. And you know, the packed away end, the away block for Osnabrück, who brought quite a strong contingency to Düsseldorf, were rewarded. And you know, as much as Düsseldorf seem to be the more likely of the sides to score again. You know, Osnabrück dug in and they did all the sort of footballing trope things. They got stuck in. They worked hard for each other, and I was impressed with what they did late in the game. And for me, you know, even though they almost conceded late on, they deserved the result in this game. You know, it was just one of those games where we've talked about it for many years on the podcast, where if you don't put teams away, you keep the door ajar, someone's going to walk through the door, and Engelhardt, who's showcasing to be a pretty solid Zweite Bundesliga striker, and you know, you're worried about some of the individual quality, and you thought, well, Kwasi Riit will probably be the number one option as a striker. It seems as Engelhardt, who for much of last season was one of their go-to guys, has really ascended to be someone capable at this level, good at holding the ball up, real option in the air, and shown to have that real fox in the box mentality, and pounced on his opportunity when the ball came to him. And yeah, it puts them... Look, it doesn't really change their situation. They're still in peril. You know, 17th, one win in their opening 9 games, 21 goals conceded. But as we mentioned earlier on the show, 7 of those goals came against Hanover. And if you... You know, those games don't happen often. But look, they're 3 games unbeaten. You know, they're in better form than, you know, majority of the teams in the bottom 6-7. So there is optimism. They just need to, you know, keep peppering the goal mouth, you know, be a bit more active. But they've shown away from home in particular, they can be a little bit tricky to get past if you, you know, mind the Hanover game. They've given teams battle. They gave Paderborn a bit of trouble on match day 2. And they showed that they showed that again against a very good Fortuna Düsseldorf side, who should be pretty disappointed they didn't put this game to bed. So yeah, Düsseldorf have got Kaiserslautern, as we've mentioned, then it's Braunschweig and Wiesbaden. Osnabrück have Wiesbaden on their return at home, which they'll feel they're a really good chance in before making the journey to Greuther Fürth. So we'll see how that goes. Wien Wiesbaden are next. We'll talk about them. They hosted Hamburg at SV at the Britta Arena on Saturday afternoon. Hamburg hoping to avoid a clean sweep of defeats to promoted sides. They've lost 2 of their away games to Osnabrück and Elversberg. It wasn't really much of a contest statistically. It was all Hamburg. They had tons of the ball. You know, lots of shots on goal. 23 shots to 6 in total. but you'd be surprised they conceded first. Came from a set piece. It was not particularly dealt with well. From Daniel Hoyer Fernandez, and Alexander Vukotic was on hand to get Wiesbaden ahead. And then the game kind of descended into a bit of carnage. Hamburg throwing the kitchen sink and some to try and get back into the game. And it took an incredibly good goal from Miro Muheim on the stroke of the 90, you know, cutting onto his left. And that's a sensational goal. It's a wonderful goal. And you almost feel for Stritzel, because there's not much he could have really done about it. And just in case you thought the pandemonium hadn't concluded, late in stoppage time, there's a penalty given away by Wiesbaden. It's a shocking, unnecessary challenge on Emmanuel Farai, who goes down. And you would think Laszlo Benes, who's been so cool and calm over the spot kicks, 6 goals this season, he's the perfect man for this situation. Instead, he hits the crossbar, ball trickles out, Wiesbaden clear, and they get a result. An important result for Wiesbaden, who had lost 3 on the bounce. But for Hamburg, disappointing. They were the better team in this game. They created the better opportunities. They not always perfect defensively, and I think Wiesbaden were able to pounce on those, you know, rare opportunities to get forward. But this is just one of those games that you look at the sort of how it progressed, and there's no way Hamburg should have dropped the points here. They were so much more superior in every facet of the game. But they were made to pay for again, you know, being quite poor in a lot of areas, especially in the final third. They were quite wasteful, and they didn't really get much production for Robert Glatzel, who, you know, we had 2 shots on goal in the 90 minutes. He didn't really have much involvement. But yeah, look, they were punished for their own mistakes. It was a pretty ordinary mistake for the goal conceded, and you know, they had to fight for it. But again, it's just a disappointing result for Hamburg, who, you know, look, as crazy as it sounds, like they're still second heading into the international break, and we're talking like them like they're 16th, but that's not them. So international break comes at a good time for them. They'll hope Sebastian Schonlau will come back into availability. It seems like midfield wise they're still strong as ever with the trio of Meffert, Banish, and Ludovic Rice. But you know, getting Emmanuel Farai back as well, you know, Königsdorfer, who had a goal taken away for offside, and that was a very tight decision, but ultimately the right one. But yeah, it was interesting to see Ustinali get the start over Dompey. I didn't really think Ustinali had much impact or influence on the game as a whole, but neither did Dompey when he came on. So yeah, it's there's not really a whole lot to talk about in this game other than just the missed opportunity for Hamburg, a team that really could have benefited from having some decent momentum and form. Getting a couple of games on the bounce with a victory would have been really good for them. But alas, they dropped the points. They dropped 2 points, and they welcome Greuther Fürth next week. Oh, sorry, not next week. On the next match day, whereas, as we mentioned with Wiesbaden, they've got a date with Osnabrück. And lastly, let's head to the Holstein Stadion. It's Holstein Kiel against Elversberg. This game ended a goal apiece. Much like the previous game we're talking about, one team was much more dominant than the other. But similar to the Dusseldorf game, they were made to pay for not making the most of their chances, and that was Kiel. And Kiel had a ton of chances in this game. 23 shots, much like Hamburg. 7 of those being on target with an expected goals of 2.19. Their goal coming just before the break with Timo Becker from a set piece. Ball not really cleared, and Becker puts it in the back of the net. But again, they didn't make the most of their dominance, and they were made to pay for that on 70 minutes when Shahin found Lucas Schnellbacher, and Schnellbacher with a delicate finish over Timon Viner to make it 1-1. And from there, again, you know, lots of opportunities. It's not as if Kiel went starving. They really were the better team. It was one of the odd occasions where we've seen Elversberg really not offer a whole lot in all areas. And one thing that became very clear, and it certainly seemed like something they'd worked on during the week, was the pressing cue. So Tor Jakobsen, who's been pretty decent for Elversberg, he likes to drop in quite deep to pick up the ball and start distributing. But you know, with Remberg and Skripski and Pickler, anytime Jakobsen picks up the ball in midfield, you would see that's when the pressing cue for Kiel to start being aggressive. And we saw on several occasions in this game where Jakobsen would cough up possession at the edge of the box, or, you know, about 25, 30 yards, and Kiel would get forward, and it would lead to, you know, very high quality goal scoring shots. And you know, Elversberg identified that they couldn't, as great as Jakobsen is, they identified they could not keep playing him. So they subbed him out for Stock on 65 minutes, and actually seemed to work a bit better for Elversberg, because up to that point, you know, Kiel had been far more aggressive offensively, 17 shots to 3, but they leveled at 6-6 in the final 25 plus minutes of the game. So it certainly worked, that substitution, and you know, bringing in fresher players, bringing in Vanner as well, really, you know, got them going in terms of being able to get forward. And look, you know, Elversberg will be pretty happy. They're 5 games unbeaten. They're sitting, you know, in 11th place. Defense is still a bit suspect, but they've improved. With, you know, Jaekel was the leader of the group. He was alongside Sickinger. But yeah, for Kiel, like, it just feels like drop points, because they had a really good opportunity to go to second. You know, they've equal in terms of wins with Kaiserslautern, Hamburg, and St. Pauli. They could have easily been in second place. But yeah, missed opportunities for them. But they've had a great start of the season. You know, 15 goals, for them. So they're amongst, you know, they're in a pretty decent area. Defensively, you know, if you're looking at it, they're about middle of the pack. Could be a bit better. But, you know, it's when you can score goals like they do, it's all good. So they're at Hansa Rostock when we return from the break. Then they host Nuremberg and Osnabrück. Elversberg have got Eintracht Braunschweig on Friday night, which will be a very winnable game for them before taking on Magdeburg and St. Pauli. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss the final three games of Matchday 9, starting at the Sportpark Ronhof Thomas Sommer when Greuther Fürth hosted Hansa Rostock. Hansa Rostock were hoping to make it two wins on the bounce when they made the journey south to Fürth to take on a Greuther Fürth side that were hoping to extend their unbeaten run to 4. This game was not a particularly easy one on the eye. It was very defensive, quite cagey, plenty of fouls as you would expect. high quality chances were limited, and Hansa in particular were quite poor in the first half. They really struggled to make any meaningful contribution in terms of getting forward, and they really struggled defending set pieces. I think that was one of Fürth's greatest strengths in this game, was their ability to create from set pieces. And normally they'd have Nico Gieselman as their set piece taker, but they lost him 9 minutes into the game. And Haddadi came in, and I thought he was actually quite good playing in that sort of left wing back, left midfielder type role. There was one goal in this game. It came with 33 minutes. Wonderful ball into the box. And for Fürth and Damien Rosbach with a really good header, but the only problem is the header beat his goalkeeper, Marcus Kolke. And it was the one and only goal of this game. Pretty disappointing for Rostock, because they were just so lackluster going forward. They were able to get things going in the second half. I thought they were improved in terms of production and getting forward, but you know, it's going to be hard to win many games when, you know, you have 8 shots on goal and six of those coming in the second half. But they did make some structural changes, a bit more of a 4-4-2 towards the end of the game, with Bramundo and Singh. But yeah, look, they liked the system with the three at the back and using Schumacher and out Strauser, and Strauss getting forward. But I think, you know, Fürth were very well set up for it. I thought Itzer and Mikowski, Dietz were both, well, all three of them were really solid, but it was the midfield battle where it was won for Fürth. You know, Wagner and Green and Hugota in that sort of triangle, you know, Green and Wagner playing as the eights, Hugota playing as the 10, they seemed to have worked really well. And for the system that Rostock were playing, they didn't really have any sort of offensive output. They wanted to play a bit more direct. They wanted to get the ball to Purga. And Fürth were really set up for those direct transitions quite well. And this is why we see, you know, Purga and we saw Pereira get subbed out at halftime for Brumado. And Purga lasted until late in the game. But look, very good performance for Fürth. Jonas Urbig was really good. He made a couple of big saves down the stretch as well. And a clean sheet. You know, you can never feel bad about clean sheets. And for them, it's their first one in quite some time. If memory serves me right, first clean sheet since match day three against St. Pauli in that 0-0 draw, where they frustrated St. Pauli. But yeah, third clean sheet of the season for them, all told. But considering some of the games they've been involved in where they've conceded 3 goals, and then the 5-0 game against Hertha and the 3-1 against Hanover, much needed result for them defensively in terms of confidence and getting back to where they want to be, and, you know, collecting 8 points out of a possible 12 in their last 4 games heading into the international break. You'd argue they were probably one of the teams that didn't really want the international break to come at this time of the season. It's really almost gone against them in many ways, but they're in that sort of gaggle of teams on 12 points. I think there's 5 of them at the moment, but they're only, what, 3 points away from 5th spot. -1 goal difference. Like a bunch of teams, they've conceded a ton of goals, but they know how to put the ball in the back of the net, so they'll feel really good about themselves. Rostock, you know, it's been pretty bad. 5 defeats in their last 6. Scoring goals is still a problem. They've scored 10 goals from their opening 9 games, and in terms of goal scoring output, only two teams are worse than them this season, that being Eintracht Braunschweig, who've only scored 6 times, and Vien Wiesbaden have only scored 7. And look, you know, there was optimism. You know, they won, what, 3 of their first 4 games. They were looking good at all ends of the ground, but they... Yeah, they've reverted to some old habits. They've really just not been able to unify. And I think part of that might be structural, but also pace of play. They don't really transition the ball quick enough. They don't really give their striker, they don't give their strikers enough time to really impact the game. And defensively, teams are much more aware and better positioned and set up. It makes it really difficult, as you can see. And look, you know, their goal scoring has started to dry up again. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Alias Schwarz. I'm losing my mind. See what Alias Schwarz comes up with during the international break, because it's clear they need to try something different, whether that might be a threat, the front look, or switching to a more conventional, you know, 4 at the back with... Because I don't think it's defensively. They don't give up many high quality scoring chances. It's a lot of it for me is just moving, progressing the ball forward. They get Kiel on their return, which will be a tricky game, but before making the journey to Wiesbaden and then having that a date with Hertha, which I'm sure they'll bring a massive contingency to the Olympiastadion. Fürth against Hamburg, that's a world feed game before having a home game against Osnabrück and then traveling to Kaiserslautern. Let's make the move to Magdeburg. Magdeburg hosted Karlsruhe on Saturday afternoon. Big game for Karlsruhe, who have been really poor of late defensively. We've talked about the struggles, and it was pretty clear from the outset that the way they wanted to play was very defensive, and it showed in this game. They managed 2 shots on goal, both coming in the first half, and their big goal-scoring opportunity was an effort from inside the center circle. Fabian Schleusner making the most of a defensive mistake from Daniel Haber, and Dominic Reimann's caught off his line. Schleusner shoots and he scores to get his 4th goal of the campaign. But from there, it was pretty much all Magdeburg who, it took them a while to get going, especially with Barisatic out of the side, who's picked up a yellow card suspension so early in the season. And it was a bit of a loss for them because they bring in Ahmed Arslan, who was fantastic for Dynamo Dresden last season, top scorer in the Dritte Liga with 25 goals, playing that role, and it took him a while to get going, but he did start to integrate quite well with Schuler. But I think they were a lot better when they brought Castaños on at halftime, and he got the goal 4 minutes into the second half. And really, Magdeburg probably should have made the most of it. I thought they were easily the better team in this game, and yeah, pretty frustrating effort. I mean, Ito hit the post late in the game, but yeah, I think, you know, there are some people who think that Aichner has probably reached a point of no return. It'll be interesting to see if anything happens during this international break. They're just I'm not entirely sure what the fix is, because it's clear that for me it seems maybe it could be structural, but you know, is their best defensive look at the moment, like they improved, but they really invested in sitting deep and inviting a lot of pressure, and you know, scoring that goal early gave them not only the competitive advantage, but it allowed them to really just focus on what their weakness is, which is defending. But yeah, it's kind of difficult to pen where Karlsruhe at the moment, because they have been disappointing, winless in their last 5 games. 3 of those 5 have been defeats. But it feels a little bit too early with what they're going to do. And then you have to ask the question, is there a coach out there at the moment who can make this squad instantly better than what they are currently? And I'm not certain. I wouldn't give up on him just yet, because he's, you know, even though if you look at his seasons, full seasons as a coach, they've finished 6th, 12th and 7th. So they're a bit of a yo-yo club. You know, they made moves in the summer. You know, we were all wowed about Lars Stindl coming back to Karlsruhe, and it just hasn't really worked as yet. I think finding a system that they can get the most of his skill set seems to be quite problematic with the team they've got. You know, they played a bit more of a 4-4-2 on the weekend. They played him up top with Schleusner, and you know, he didn't really have a lot of influence in the game. You know, no shots on goal, both those coming from Schleusner. So yeah, look, it's clear that they're a team that really hasn't figured out what their best mix is going forward, and you know, we'll see what they do in the future. But you know, Schalke probably, they might have wanted to play Schalke last week because they're extremely vulnerable. But you know, another team that really needs to work on improving at both ends of the ground. So that actually becomes a really pivotal game when you've got these two sides who are expected to be closer to the front, battling between, you know, in positions 14th and 16th. So yeah, that'll be quite interesting. Then they're at St. Pauli and Paderborn, so three really tricky games for them to navigate. And one would suspect if they can't get results in the next block of four before the last international break of the calendar year, there could be some changes afoot. But I'd be surprised if we see changes. I think there are other clubs that might look at a coaching change, but I don't think they're one of them. Magdeburg, it's been a bit of a rocky patch for them. You know, winless in their last four games after that red-hot start of the campaign where they were really, you know, indulging the imagination. Still one of the best scoring teams in the league. They've scored 18 times, which is a bunch of teams that have scored 18 goals, along with Hertha and St. Pauli, Kaiserslautern as well. So they've got the goal scoring punch. They just were a bit wasteful with their chances. They didn't make the most of them. But there's, I think the good thing for them is that Tietz changed up at halftime. You know, he brought on Castaños. Who else did he bring on? He brought on Krimpicki and Ito. And certainly they were a lot more effective going forward. They had similar stability in midfield with Krimpicki for Conde. But yeah, I think the changes worked. It bared fruit immediately for them. And then they really pushed on for that game-winning goal, but they just weren't able to make the most of it. So Magdeburg, they're at Hanover before having a home game with Elversberg, and then a top Spiel game against Hamburg on the 4th of November. And finally, we head to Braunschweig. It's Eintracht Braunschweig against Paderborn. Whew. The scoreline almost seems a bit deceiving because Paderborn wins this game 3-1. Goals from Mattias Hansson, Rafael Obermeier, Philip Bilbia scores in stoppage time. Robert Ivanov gets the one and only goal for Braunschweig from a set piece. But although Braunschweig were okay in this game, much better in the second half. You know, the numbers in terms of XG, you know, 1.97 to 2.12 in favour of Paderborn. But we know the troubles Braunschweig have had going forward. And look, no more evident than in this game. You know, they hit the post late. They weren't bad in this game, but you look at the goals they gave up. The first one, he has a set-piece goal. Hansen gets to the near post. Great ball from Muslia. Second goal, Grimaldi with a sensational ball to Rafael Obermeier. And, you know, that was pretty poorly defended post that. And the third goal was a mistake from Ivanov, who was pressed by substitute Max Kruse. Kruse to Conte, and then Conte plays a great ball to the running Bilbia at the back post, and he scores the third. But yeah, I you know, again, and so the one thing that will, like, is coming out of this, the two games that they've had without Anthony Uja, they've had 20 shots on goal and 23 shots on goal in this game, but they've got four shots on target from 43 shots on goal. So maybe, like, it might be one of those cases where they gotta just invest a little bit more in some shooting practice. I know that's a big thing that they talk about in AFL footy, bringing some homeland into here, where if a team kicks inaccurately, that's the first thing they talk about. It's like, oh, you know, the sports scientists won't let them shoot and, you know, take set shots. And maybe it's just a case of, you know, it's a mental thing as well, that they get in front of the goal and they don't really know what to do. which is kind of crazy because they're professional athletes. But they were, look, they're improving. I think that's the positive, excluding the results, is that they are getting the ball forward. They're creating a lot more opportunities. They've shown that in their last two games. But the stats don't lie. One win in their opening nine games. And that only win came against Schalke on match day three. 6 goals in 9 games is not going to cut it at this level. We know teams that, you know, the lowest goal-scoring teams last season, they scored 32 goals. Now, both of those teams survived, but a lot of that had to do with, you know, three teams being incredibly much worse at the defensive end than they were, and not picking up results. So, you look, the seat should be quite warm for Jens Hartl, you'd think. And their next three games, Elversberg away, which will be tricky, Fortuna Düsseldorf, and then Hanover and the Derby. And you know the Derby game, you know, inexcusable. If they lose that, it'll be really hard, I think, for Hartl to keep his role with De Leuven. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, they're not in great shape. Paderborn, they've started to turn the tide a little bit. 3 wins in the last 4 games after really struggling. When we spoke with Abel Mezeros on match day 4, there was concern that Paderborn might not have the same impact on this season, but since then they've won. They've started to get back on the gravy train, and look, defensively they're still a bit up and down, but they did enough in this game. I think they made the most of their opportunities. They were effective. You know, if you look at they had 6 shots on target, 3 of those ending goals. And you know, they only missed one of their big chances, according to FotMob. So yeah, look, they're in good shape. They got St. Pauli on the return, and then Hertha. So like two pretty challenging fixtures. The St. Pauli one will be a really good litmus test for them to see how far they've come. But they would probably be another team that will be a bit annoyed that the international break has come at this stage. So yeah, look, I think they're in really good shape. And Adriano Grimaldi, who is an experienced campaigner. Just wanted to touch on him for a sec, but he's been really good since they've implemented him into the starting lineup. He's not always going to score goals, but he's doing a lot in the build-up phase. He had that really good assist for the Obermeier goal. But yeah, like, so maybe he's their solution up top. You know, you had Kruse coming off the bench. He's still working back to fitness. They had Klaas and Ansa behind in those sort of like, kind of like number 10-ish type roles, but they play quite wide. They get wide, but defensively they play narrow. But yeah, like, it's starting to click for them. And I think, you know, the important thing for them is the efficiency in the final third. They're making the most of their chances. And if you can defensively hold up, which they showed they could, you know, they were going to get rewarded, and they did. So yeah, look, they're now in seventh place. And it is definitely far cry from where they were many match days ago. That's it from me, Matthew Karagic. It's been a pleasure to have your company from wherever you're listening to the Zweite Bundesliga podcast around the world. We'll be back in a couple of weeks to discuss all of the action from match day 10. And it's a bit unusual to ask this, but I will. But if you enjoy the Zweite Bundesliga podcast, please leave a review, whether it's on Spotify or Apple or whichever platform you listen to the podcast. It's greatly appreciated that you're listening to us. And yeah, and if there's anything you'd like us to do in terms of things you'd like to see further developed in the podcast, you know, drop a comment on the podcast, and I read them all. So you know, try and implement some new things and help this podcast continue to grow in its sixth season. But yeah, enjoy the international break. I'm sure we'll be all craving Zweite Bundesliga football when it hits Friday. Yeah, we'll see you soon when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.